Many thanks for coming along tonight to hear Stephen Jones address the Sydney Institute. He was last here, I think, a decade ago, and I think the topic was something like, where will we be in the next decade? And I think the answer is, back at the Sydney Institute is the answer. Now, he's well known to you, so before introducing him, I should say thanks to Zurich Financial Services for this great facility tonight. It's very much appreciated. Stephen Jones was elected to the House of Representatives in 2010. He held a number of senior positions in the Shadow Ministry, and of course, since the election, the Assistant Treasurer and Minister for Financial Services.
Thanks so much, Jared. Great to be back. I'd like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the traditional custodians of the land on which we're meeting here today. Thank their elders past, present and emerging. Acknowledge any Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are with us here today. I want to reiterate the Albanese government's commitment to the Uluru Statement and the Heart and the conversation that we're going to have in Australia over the next couple of months around changing our constitution to recognise 65,000 years of pre-European heritage, something that we can all be very, very proud of. Like to acknowledge our host, Zurich, and thank them for the opportunity to address you all. Also like to acknowledge my colleague, Jerome Laxalle, member for Bennelong, the adjoining electorate, I think, if I've got my my geography straight. As Jared said, I first addressed the Sydney Institute back in 2013. It wasn't a happy time for us. It was in the immediate aftermath of Labor's election loss. I talked about the need for Labor to use its time in opposition to work on a unifying agenda that tied together our economic and our social vision for the country. At the time, I emphasised the importance of improving the dialogue with business and about the common values that should form the basis of that dialogue. So I do want to thank the Sydney Institute for having me back again and for the team who are giving me the opportunity to share some thoughts with you this afternoon. Tonight I want to lay out the government's agenda for superannuation and outline what 2023 has in store for that. Superannuation, quite simply, betters the lives of millions of Australians. Many views have and will continue to be expressed about the best way forward for this cornerstone public policy. The Sydney Institute has long understood the importance of having conversations about cornerstone public policy issues. In your own words, the Institute has a vision of encouraging debate and discussion and entertaining a wide and diverse range of views. This is the Institute's objective, and it's an objective that has guided you for over 30 years. In comparison, I find it striking that superannuation has also existed for over 30 years without a clear and shared understanding of its objective. If you think about it, there's no other foundational public policy that has existed for 30 years without a clear and shared understanding of its objective. Just think about it. Medicare. Objective is to provide universal health care. The HECS and HELP system provides equal access to tertiary education. ANZUS lays the foundation of our defence alliance. For a system that requires certainty, the lack of a legislated objective for superannuation is more than an eyesore. The government's going to address it. Yesterday, the Treasurer launched the consultation on our proposed objective of superannuation. I really hope that this isn't the start of one of those very, very boring Canberra culture wars. Rather, it should be a uniting conversation for Australians. I have a lot of faith, actually, in Australians' ability to sift through the noise and focus on the essence of the issues. There are big challenges, but there are also great opportunities. We can meet the challenges and seize these opportunities for a more prosperous retirement for working families. But even the best GPS can't direct you if you don't have a clear understanding of the destination. Let me set the context for superannuation. Universal superannuation started as an economic tool. The purpose was to extend the benefits of retirement savings to middle Australia. It wasn't supposed to be the answer to everything. It was about extending the benefits of superannuation, retirement income, to middle Australia. There was also an immediate motivation with a wages trade-off to fight inflation through deferred consumption, an objective that has got resonance with today. For over 30 years, the superannuation system has grown to be the world's third or fourth largest private pension pool, with over $3.3 trillion of funds under management. According to ASFA, investment returns have steadily averaged 8.1% per year over the last 10 years. This is more than a success story. Superannuation has been a life changer for millions of Australians. Working families are retiring with larger balances than ever before. They are sharing in the economic dividend of the nation's prosperity. And it's my vision that we can make a great system even better on the following three tenets: a political consensus, strong performance, and member satisfaction. Let me say something about the political consensus. We're committed to legislating an objective for superannuation because there should be a political consensus. On average, superannuation is the second largest asset that most Australians own. This has got to be something that's above politics. But over the last decade, we've seen the superannuation sector seemingly with its back against the wall. All roads may lead to Rome, but not all superannuation policy has led to improved outcomes for members. It's become a cash cow for bad ideas and the last hope for problems that governments were afraid to tackle. The disastrous decision to allow billions to be withdrawn from superannuation through the pandemic will be felt for decades to come. The proposals that have been rejected over that decade have been just as consequential. For example, using super to pay off HECS, using super for housing. As members' balances increase, it's become apparent that we need a strong framework in place to remind governments whose money it is. It's not ours, it's yours. It's for your retirement. And this should be something that Australians can rely on, no matter who's in government. Ironically, I've often thought of superannuation as a quintessentially liberal idea. Just think about it. Who would you expect to say the following things? Individuals should be encouraged to be self-reliant. Government support should be targeted to those most in need. An individual should enjoy the rewards of their own hard work in retirement. In the words of John Locke, the most precious of all possessions is the power over ourselves. Superannuation gives Australians power over their own retirement in a way that they've never had before. And so I call on all parties across the political divide to join us in enshrining this objective. Now, we've suggested some words. That is that the objective of superannuation is to preserve savings, to deliver income for a dignified retirement alongside government support in an equitable and sustainable way. Now, we think that just about captures it, but let's have a conversation about it. We welcome the country's views on ensuring that we've got it right. Some might ask, why are we doing this? Simply, it's about ensuring that our policy is guided by a true north. That the custodians of the system, the government, the regulators, the trustees, are held to account for their decisions. And so that there's certainty. So that we have a defence against bad ideas. And so we can focus on delivering in the best interests of the members. Can I say something about this notion of preservation? We only need to consider the concept of preservation to understand the practical effect of having it included, and that word included, in an objective. In the superannuation context, preservation is the idea that savings are not accessible until your retirement. It's a core principle of the system. In fact, preservation is superannuation. Our tax concessions and many other parts of the system recognised this fundamental fact. And one of the strengths of superannuation and the system is that workers receive the benefits of significant compounding returns on a fairly low risk investment over their lifetime. Without preservation, it's like forgetting to apply sunscreen for the day at the beach. It may seem like nothing, but this short-term oversight comes back to hurt you in the long run. It's a costly decision, as members will retire with less, and it increases the likelihood of them needing additional government support in their retirement. This is why it's only ever a short-term solution for governments to look at superannuation as the answer to everything. I've already mentioned how sadly Australians will feel the pain of the early release of superannuation program during the pandemic for decades to come. Over 3 million people, many of them who are young, applied to release their superannuation. About $36 billion was ultimately released. Almost 40% of the applicants were earning less than $37,000 a year. How tragic that our young and low income were encouraged by government to do this. Or even worse, it was their only choice. The attacks on preservation are still current. Some would say that housing affordability, for example, can be addressed by encouraging people to raid their superannuation. This policy is the new clothes of an emperor who actually doesn't believe in the system. We know that the answer to housing affordability, particularly right now, is building new homes. We don't have enough of them. And if we dump a whole heap more money into a system where we have existing supply problems, the price of housing will go up and up and up. We need a legislative objective of superannuation to stop governments trying to use super for anything but retirement incomes. Tonight, I also want to go further and call out what I've seen as the emergence of, frankly, unconscionable behaviour. There are some surgeons and medical practitioners who see super as a river of gold. They're encouraging and even pressuring sometimes patients to tap into their super for what might be called life-enhancing procedures. Now, there may be some occasions on which a person needs to access their superannuation on compassionate grounds for urgent and necessary health purposes. But they've got, now we are seeing the emergence of business models which are being set up to game the system. It has to be called out. It's actually indefensible. How should the taxpayer feel about subsidising cosmetic surgery? Because that's actually what's happening. Are employers going to be happy to say we're making a, employers who are happy, in my view, happy to say, yes, as a part of our wages and our remuneration, we make a contribution to the retirement savings of our employees. Most of them do the right thing. Overwhelmingly, they do the right thing and make that contribution. How are they going to feel if they learn that their contribution was going to the incomes of certain surgeons and promoters of schemes for things that really don't stack up? These are not isolated incidents. It's greedy, it doesn't pass the pub test, and it's wrong. This is the practical impact of a policy space that lacks a clear and grounded objective. And it's why the objective of superannuation needs to be simple and solely focused on bettering and ensuring retirement incomes. In the proposed definition, we talked about sustainability and equity. And over the last 24 hours, some have misinterpreted those words in our proposed objective. Concessional taxation on super, compared with wages, is a cost to the budget, pure and simple. Legislating an objective gives us the means to assess the value of this expenditure. This is both fair and responsible. Superannuation is an Australian success story. We want to ensure that it is affordable and equitable for the next 30 years and beyond. Can I say something about performance? Because retirement incomes are maximised by lifting the performance of superannuation funds. And in the spirit of what I said earlier, and that is attempting to elevate superannuation policy above the political fray, I want to acknowledge that my predecessors made an important contribution to the canon of superannuation regulation by focusing on performance. Each MySuper product now has been subject to an annual performance test to hold trustees accountable for the performance of their funds. This is a good thing. It's been a blunt instrument to increase performance and drive down fees, and that's worked. As you may know, that this performance test has been a key part of the review that I've tasked Treasury to complete to uncover any unintended consequences. Stakeholders have expressed a range of views and will have more to say on the outcomes of that review very shortly. But let me be very, very clear. The performance test is here to stay. It's good policy and it will continue. It would not be consistent with the objective of superannuation to remove a test which is holding trustees accountable to get the best outcomes for their members. Just as governments will be held to account when the objective of superannuation is legislated, so trustees will continue to be held to account for their performance with members' funds. It's important that as we have this debate, that we have a clear-eyed view which separates the objectives of superannuation with the manifest and manifold benefits of superannuation. Superannuation is a huge pool of capital, which if marshalled strategically, can be a game changer for the nation. This doesn't mean that funds have to stop acting in the best financial interests of their members. Of course they can and must. That's the law. And where these interests align with the national interest, super funds can be a force multiplier in creating wealth for the nation by investing in Australia and for Australia. Nor should the objective in any way restrict superannuations from serving their members. I've made it very clear to the sector that I expect them to do more for their members, particularly in the area of service delivery. This isn't a cottage industry anymore. They should be held to the same service standards that we hold any other actor within the financial services industry. Service levels aren't currently up to standard and they need to improve. With an ageing population, more members are retiring with more income than ever before. A focus on accumulating large balances, while important, is only half the story. Funds need to do more to understand and know their members and to serve their diverse needs. That will help deliver a dignified outcome, ensuring that we shift from merely accumulating wealth to ensuring we can find ways to creatively distribute that wealth to the fund member on their retirement. Retirement income is the objective of the superannuation system. A dignified retirement is what superannuation is for. And I'm proud of what superannuation means to this country, what it means to working families, and it'll be strengthened under the Albanese government. It starts with establishing a political consensus, which must make it clear that superannuation is for retirement income. It's not for cosmetic surgery, it's not for estate planning, it's not for housing. And so we're inviting the country to join in this conversation that will set the terms for superannuation policy for the decades to come. Because with an objective that's codified, Australians will have certainty about the direction, a direction that guarantees preservation, that maximises performance and puts members' needs where they should be, at the centre of our system. This is the vision for better retirement incomes for all Australians, and that's the objective of superannuation. Thanks so much for the opportunity to share some thoughts with you this evening.
Thanks all. Many thanks to the Minister, and we'll come to questions and discussion broadly on the topic of the talk. Jacqueline will be working, our chair, that side of the room, and I'll be working this side of the room. So if you come back, Minister. Many thanks. 30 years, as you know, is a long time. And so someone who entered the workforce 30 years ago, say the age of 20, is sort of 50 now. As I recall, when superannuation was set up under the Keating government, the aim really was, you've mentioned both sides, but it was also to take some pressure off the budget as well as that. These days, there are still a lot of part pensions being paid to people who 30 years through the superannuation scheme. Do you think that's going to continue, or do you think that the pension payments are going to come down as the scheme advances?
Yeah, as you correctly note, Gerard, when we started on this project in the mid-1980s, I think the ratio of retirees to working age Australians was 1 in 7. Today we're at 1 in 4, and we're on a fast trajectory to 1 in 3. That's the hard fact that we face. So superannuation is not a nice add-on. It's actually going to be an absolute essential part of budget sustainability. But as Jim said in his speech yesterday, we've got to ensure that the encouragement that we are giving to Australians through tax concessions, significant tax concessions, because superannuation is treated differently to every other form of income as it's earned, as it achieves investment returns, and when it's drawn down on, it gets significant tax concessions at each part of the process. It's legitimate for Australians to ask, are we targeting those concessions properly? And when we answer that with yes, we are targeting those concessions properly, we'll get the balance right. And we will ensure that for those Australians who have not been able to accumulate over the course of their life sufficient private savings, that the pension is there to look after them and ensure that they have a dignified retirement. But for the vast majority of Australians, superannuation becomes their basis for a dignified retirement. And I've been asked a couple of times, I might jump to that, what does dignified retirement mean? Well, I can guarantee that the definition of a dignified retirement that existed in 1984 is going to be very different to a dignified retirement that exists today, and a very different definition of dignified retirement that'll exist when my kids retire. My grandfather probably thought a dignified retirement was mashed potato and a few sausages every night, and that'd do it for him. My generation, you know, we've grown up with mobile phones and access to Wi-Fi and broadband and all the other things that we now know and think of as an essential part of life. Great, they're enhancing our lives, but they also come with added costs. So as each generation progresses, the definition of what is going to be essential to a dignified retirement is going to shift. Superannuation is in part an answer to that. It's about growing the middle class of Australia, and that's an objective that we can all share in.
Thank you. Robin Fitzsimons, thank you very much for that. Could I bring up the question of the age of 75 restriction in terms of being able to contribute. That seems to be based on past history, just in the way that you said the concept of a dignified retirement changes. I'm well into my 70s. A lot of my peer group and myself are working very hard, thank you very much, because we've got a concept that if we live to our late 90s or our 90s or to 100 in the way that many of our parents have been doing, there's going to be a different set of costs. So I can understand the point about having not being estate planning. Let me tell you, my peer group is not working for estate planning. They're working for the 90s and beyond. So can you consider a formula, please, which allows a contribution beyond the age of 75, particularly for those who choose to work and to continue to contribute in that way?
Yeah, thanks, Robin. Great question, and like brings up so many issues that we're struggling with. You quite rightly point out the fact that there are many people working well beyond the age 65 or 67, depending, 65 or 67, access to pension age. And I expect that over the next few decades, we'll be adjusting a whole heap of areas of public policy to account for that. I think that, however, is a very good example of why we should be focusing on the objective of superannuation, which is about providing a retirement income and ensuring that the way we deal with particularly drawdowns accounts for the fact that some people may be drawing down on their superannuation and receiving a wage and receiving other sorts of support through those older years. And I think we've got to have a very nuanced retirement income system which deals with all of those sources. Also, the example you cite gives me the opportunity to raise something else as well. You are right, there are many Australians that are working to the age of 75 and beyond. There's also many Australians who, for lots of reasons, are finishing somewhere in their 50s. In fact, I was having some conversations with Jeff from Zurich and his colleagues earlier. Somewhere between 1 in 4 and 1 in 5 Australians leaving the workforce in their 50s. And we've got a pension system and a superannuation system which doesn't account for that. It's all assuming a 40-year working life and ending abruptly at the age 65. So we're going to have to look at some nuances in the system to deal with both of those issues. I don't think all of the answers lie inside of superannuation, by the way. I think some of them lie in other levers of public policy.
Gary Donovan, PFD John. Thank you, Minister, again, for taking the time to address us. My question, you mentioned the objective performance assessment. Part of achieving that is obviously the regulatory efficiency. And I wonder if in the fundamental review, and Treasury is conducting a number of consultations as we speak, that a concept which is now nearing 30 years as well, that there is a thing that could be called one financial service or encompassed in a financial product, and therefore led to the creation of two regulatory agencies in APRA and ASIC. And whether there should now be a review of that concept and for regulatory efficiency and allow people to achieve the objectives and performance.
Okay.
That we bring superannuation,
okay,
insurance and credit under APRA and allow ASIC to return to its primary objective of protecting.
Okay, got it.
Thanks so much, Gary. We've got a bunch of things on our agenda over the course of this year. The Treasurer has already launched a review of the Reserve Bank, which will report this year. We've launched a review of the Productivity Commission. There's only so much a government can digest in any 12-month or two-year period. So I think, without wanting to preempt decisions, I think you can expect that these are the things we're going to bite off in this year and look at the implementation of those things. We've got a very full agenda. a wholesale overhaul of our regulatory agencies ain't on the current agenda.
Minister Richard Beattie, superannuation with something like, what, $3 trillion is obviously one of the largest sums of money that the government has to be concerned about. When I'm thinking about the 40 estimates and everything the government has announced, and most particularly in your speciality of superannuation, the most important test for me would be the achievement and improvement in productivity, and particularly in a high inflationary environment we're in at the moment. If we don't significantly, materially increase productivity, we're in trouble of maintaining what we've got at the moment. How do you think the government will stand, let's say, in the 4-year estimates on a productivity improvement, including with all of the off-budget announcements that you're proposing to put forward?
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Well, some of those off-budget announcements, including our National Reconstruction Fund, have a laser-like focus on improving productivity. $15 billion set aside to invest on a commercial basis through the co-investment or loans to basically restart manufacturing in this country and to ensure that we can be commercializing some of the existing R&D that is going on and ensuring in some targeted areas we are building on existing strengths. The industry minister likes to talk about the fact that we have all the components that go into making a battery, but we do very little downstream processing of any of those components. We can lift the value chain in those areas. How can we help Australian industry get there? Productivity right across the board has got to be a focus. You ask whether superannuation has a role to play in any of that. I think it does. Again, it's not the objective of superannuation to be driving productivity in this country, but a benefit of superannuation is the nature of the investment cycles of a superannuation fund. Unlike banks, unlike a whole heap of other forms of investment or credit, they're in it for the long term. Their business model is making investments which may not mature for a 10, 15, sometimes even a 20-year period. They're the sorts of investments, long-term strategic investments, which are enhancing productivity, particularly in the area of infrastructure. And it might sound strange for you to hear a Labor person make this point, but if you look at major infrastructure assets around the country that have been privatised over the last 20 years, the major investor in those have been superannuation funds, and they are driving efficiency, whether it's port, whether it's road, whether it's rail, whether it's airports. Major source of capital in those areas are superannuation funds, and yes, they are driving productivity.
Minister Eddie Graham, in response to Gerard's question, you remarked on the fact that there are significant tax concessions allowed to the superannuation industry, and you postulated whether or not we are targeting those concessions properly. Can I ask you a question about that?
Yep.
One of Mr. Keating's fair, sensible and sound achievements as Treasurer was to introduce franking credits that ensured that the same income of a company taxed at the appropriate corporate rate, wasn't taxed twice. Mm-hmm. When it was distributed by way of dividend to the company shareholders. The later changes to the imputation system, and I'll be as brief as I can, I'm halfway there. Later changes to the imputation system have led to refunds of corporate tax being paid by the Commonwealth to shareholders when the individual tax rate of a shareholder happens to be less than the corporate rate that's already been paid on the income as earned by the company. The question, does your government plan to stop handouts being made by the Commonwealth from corporate tax that has already been paid to line the pockets of industry, self-managed and other superannuation funds which are already enjoying favourable tax treatment because they're paying half the rate of tax.
The Minister may want to take that on notice.
No, I'm going to answer it straight up because there's some speculation that's been going on about this. The policy we took to the 2019 election is dead. Okay, this was the excess franking credit to mum and dad investors. It was voted on by the Australian people and we won't be revisiting. There are two proposals which were actually put to and agreed to by the former Morrison government. And yes, we will be taking those up over the next 3 months. They deal with non-commercial capital raisings funded by excess franking credits. If there's anyone in the room who's done one of those, you'll be an exception. And the other one is off-market share buybacks, again, subsidised by the Australian taxpayer. Again, if there's somebody in the room who's been involved in an off-market share buyback, you'll be in the extreme minority of Australians, and it probably means that you are a superannuation fund. We think they're a tax loophole that need to be closed. The overwhelming majority of Australians will feel nothing as a result of us doing it. But it closes a loophole, makes our superannuation system stronger, and improves the integrity of our tax system.
Okay, so we've got to keep our comments, questions brief. Yeah.
And I'll try and do the same, Jared. Oh,
no, you're fine. We're having trouble with the audience, not with the Minister.
I'm loving the audience, it's all good.
Minister, good evening. My name is Geoffrey Gill. I've been working in superannuation longer than you've been alive. Most of that time...
I think that carbon dates both of us, Geoffrey.
Most of that time, we've had a situation where age-based contributions, so that the amount was higher as you grew older and less when you were younger. And that makes a certain amount of sense, because most people, when they're starting off, they have little money, they've got babies and children and mortgages, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. A couple of years ago, that was changed to a flat so much a year. Are you going to restore it to a more sensible age-based system?
In short, no. In short, no, because unlike the system that existed when you started in the game and probably before I was born, we have a universal system of superannuation contributions in this country. We've got to a level above 10% now. We're on our way to 12%. It smooths consumption over the course of a working life. Is it perfect? No. Have we made some adjustments to ensure that couples or individuals can make additional contributions as and when they can afford them towards the end of their working life? Yes. Have we made some other adjustments, for example, to incentivise and provide a facility for downsizing so a proportion of sale of a house can go into a superannuation? Yes, we're doing that. But a wholesale review of annual contribution caps, for the reasons that the Treasurer and I have been talking about around sustainability of the system and ensuring tax benefits go to where they are most needed, no, we won't be doing an overall review or reversal of those arrangements.
So just before we go to the next question, I think the original plan from the Keating government was 15% contribution. Is there any prospect of any government going back to that kind of level, or do you think it will settle more around 12%?
There are many within the Labor movement who say 15% is where we should go, and we understand that. But from the government's point of view, we're focused on 12. And we're not there yet. We'll get to 12 by 2025. We want to embed that. We want to bed that in. And any move beyond that, it's not current government policy, and it's something you would look at the economic circumstances sometime well beyond 2025.
Brief.
Thank you, Minister Peter Costello. I heard you reference the other one. I heard you reference the accountability of performance and objectives and benefits. A number of people, probably everyone I know, their balance has dropped from the previous year. And made the comment universally, we'd be better off having the funds ourselves and looking after our own investments than losing money thousands every year through this super scheme. Is your performance accountability going to look at this, and will these drops stop, and will we get profits in the future?
Thanks, Peter. If you look at superannuation over any quarter or any year, you're going to see volatility. And anyone who had money invested in equities over the last 12 months outside of the superannuation system would have seen that same drop in their equity portfolio. But we look at things over the long term, and we are still having a pretty robust 8% average return over a 10-year period. It might moderate a bit over last year, this year, next year, but I foresee that those long-term averages will hold up. Do we want to ensure that those performance benchmarks are current, are relevant, are ensuring that we get the right risk return? Absolutely. Risk-rated return? Absolutely. It's in our interest to ensure that superannuation funds are getting the absolute best return for their members for a whole heap of reasons, because we believe in it. But remember that 7-in-1 ratio, now 4-in-1 ratio, heading to 3-in-1 ratio. We all have an interest in ensuring that this system works.
Good evening, Minister. I'm Gregory Tanya. In the space of the self-managed superannuation fund,
we can't hear you.
In the space of the self-managed superannuation fund, there is a consideration that they might cap a super fund for all members at $5 million. Do you have any comments about that? Which if it's being considered, it's somewhat goes against the spirit of allowing members to have retirement funds. And the other question.
Okay, that'll do. We've got one at a time.
Thank you, Greggy. I get it.
Can you just repeat the question, Hesselman? It's about capping at $5 million,
right? Gregory's asked me about a proposal being floated around capping the balances in a superannuation fund. Let me be very clear about this. This is not about capping the amount of money you can save for your retirement. This is not about capping the amount of money that you can hand over to in an estate plan to your kids or anyone else that you want to hand money on to. This is about saying what level of taxpayer preferred or tax assisted savings is a reasonable level. How much tax subsidy is it reasonable for the Australian budget, the Australian people, to provide for if the objective of the system is retirement income? Now, I've talked about the fact that there are within the, it's not just the SMSF sector actually, there are a whole bunch of superannuation funds with balances in excess of $100 million. There are a whole lot more in excess of $10 million, and as we move between 10 and 20, the number expands as well. So I ask you all to consider this. If the objective is retirement income, I don't think anyone can seriously argue that a balance of $100 million is about retirement income. It might be about getting the best tax treatment of your investment. Sure, don't argue. That's what the current law provides, the best tax treatment of your investment. Superannuation, 15% versus your marginal rate elsewhere. Yep, that makes sense from a tax minimisation purpose. But it doesn't make sense from a government perspective, which is building a system around maximising retirement income, because nobody can argue that example is about retirement income. It's about tax minimisation or estate planning. So somewhere between 5 and 100, or wherever it is, we'll get the right number. And yes, I acknowledge that there's issues around multi-member SMSFs that we'll have to consider. But we want to ensure that the system is sustainable, okay? And providing up to $1 billion per annum in tax concessions for funds that have got nothing to do with retirement income is not sustainable.
Self-managed funds, right?
Hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's not, I just want to be clear. This is not targeted at one form of superannuation fund versus another. It's looking at what the objective or the purpose of the system is. It's about retirement income. Tell me how $100 million plus.
Okay, hang on. We're getting close to the end. We've got
got to be brief and no interjections. Ronnie.
Mr. Jones, I heard your comments a few minutes ago about off-market buybacks and heard your comments about off-market buybacks, frame credits and the capital raisings, etc., etc. Do you think the current tax rate on SMSFs, or namely 15% and 10%, is appropriate?
Again, actually not going to get drawn into appropriateness of a taxation on one form of superannuation versus another form of superannuation funding vehicle. We've got taxation arrangements which are about incentivising retirement savings and recognising that preservation issue. Were you to design the system from scratch, knowing what we know today and with the system in place today, you might do it differently, but this is the one we've got. I'm not going to speculate on those sorts of things. We want to ensure that the system performs well, that it's sustainable over the long term. We've identified that issue around high balance funds as something that we need to address. There's not some other vast agenda that we're out there contemplating.
For those of us who've spent a lifetime earning more than what we spent, which is something that governments don't seem to be able to do, would you understand that we have a nervousness about the government now starting to play with superannuation? And I was watching TV last night and I saw you some 12 months ago saying that under no circumstances will a future Labor government try to do anything to do with superannuation. Now, how do you... I've got it recorded, if you like, just a bit.
Sure.
How do you reconcile your current fiddling with the superannuation, and do you understand our nervousness?
Well, firstly, in understanding Australians' nervousness about constant changes to superannuation regulations, that's exactly why we want to put in place an objective of super. So we have a true north, a benchmark, a standard, a common community understanding about what the system is about, and a test against which any future changes will be measured. That's it, precisely why we want to enshrine an objective of superannuation. I'd be delighted if you were able to provide me with a copy of that videotape of me saying something like that, because I'm almost certain that I would have not said those words, because we went to the election with a platform of things that we wanted to work with the superannuation industry on for the betterment of Australians and for the strengthening of the Australian retirement income system.
Okay, I think it was the final question. We're running out of time. If you mentioned when you started off the answer to that question, what you went to the election with. So if you could just were to come back here in two and a bit years, what do you think you might, I mean, you've got to get stuff through the Senate, but what would you want to achieve as distinct from when you came to office in May 2022?
Sure. Yeah. The things that we've laid before the Australian people, we want to ensure that we enshrine an objective of superannuation which creates a common understanding across the parliament, across the population at large, about what superannuation is for and what it is not for. That doesn't mean all of these other things that are raised from time to time that we should use superannuation for are not legitimate concerns and issues, but often they point to another area of government failure or another government's policy failure. Superannuation becomes the answer to. So an objective of superannuation to ground policy formulation. Secondly, to ensure that superannuation funds are performing better and ensuring that they are performing in the best interests of the members whose money they manage. Thirdly, to ensure that we have explored opportunities where government can partner with the $3.3 trillion worth of funds under management to improve the national interest. Let me be clear, this is not about bending the best financial interests of a fund or the members of that fund to the will of the government. It is about us saying, if we can look at an area of investment which makes a great return for a fund, but also enhances a national outcome, we'd be nuts not to do it. So let's explore those opportunities. An objective so we know what we're on about, high-performing funds, partnership with a great Australian success story. If we're able to land those three things, I'd be delighted to come back in 2.5 years' time and say tick, tick, tick. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, many thanks to the Minister tonight for an important speech and taking half an hour questions on all range of issues, which showed a great head for detail and ability to explain what the government's on about in relation to superannuation. So we're very grateful. It's pretty rare you can get a minister talking to a general audience about all kinds of technical matters, and he handled it extremely well, and we're very grateful. And make a good paper when it's published, and it'll be on television later on. But for tonight, well done. Thank you.